Good morning, Kansas City. About 7 minutes from now at 10:15 Central Standard Time, the states of Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Oklahoma will all be participating in a 9-state simultaneous earthquake drill. Now, these are not exactly earthquake-prone states, so what's shaking with this? Well, today is Great Central U.S. Shakeout Day. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. The Shakeout Day in question is timed in part to commemorate the last big quake on the Missouri Boot Hills New Madrid Fault, which 200 years ago registered 7.2 on the Richter scale. Join us now to talk about the fault's characteristics today and examine predictions on a damaging earthquake that could be coming to the central U.S. is geologist Charles Spencer, author of Roadside Geology of Missouri. Welcome back to Central Standard.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be here.
Now, tell us about the New Madrid Fault, as opposed to New Madrid. New Madrid Fault. Where is it, and what are its characteristics?
Well, the New Madrid Fault is not actually one fault. It's technically the New Madrid Seismic Zone. It's a collection of faults associated with a very old geologic structure called the Real Foot Rift, which is basically a place in the Earth's crust that began to split apart some 750 million years ago for a short time. And the Real Foot Rift is a part of this zone that dropped down many thousands of feet and contains several faults. And those are the ones that were responsible for the large earthquakes in 1811, 1812, as well as probably at least three previous events that geologists have been able to identify.
Let's talk about what a seismic zone is, and then we'll get into the characteristics of the actual earthquake and what caused it. What is a seismic zone?
A seismic zone is a term used by geologists just to refer to a region that has a lot of earthquake activity. It's an area mapped on the Earth's surface, usually associated with some kind of geologic structures, lots of different faults. So it basically just describes any area where there are lots of earthquakes.
February 7th, 1812. What geological conditions caused this earthquake?
Well, the Real Foot Rift and the faults in it represent weaknesses in the Earth's crust. And over time, forces that are being transmitted through the Earth's crust by plate tectonics or other phenomenon put stress on the faults. And when the points reach that the forces that are being applied exceed the ability of the rocks along the faults to resist, then they move rather suddenly. And starting in December of 1811, a series of very large earthquakes occurred in the Missouri Boot Heel region associated with the faults of this rift. They began actually near Blytheville, Arkansas, and subsequent earthquakes happened on pretty much a line from the first earthquake to the northeast along what's known as the Blytheville Fault, which is part of this rift zone. The magnitudes of these earthquakes have to be estimated. There was no Richter scale in 1812. It was invented in 1930.
So how then do they know that it was 7.2?
Well, they don't really. They estimate it based on contemporaneous accounts of what people were seeing, and things like rippling of the Earth's surface requires a fairly large earthquake to produce surface distortions like that. The other thing they look for in that area is that whole region of the Missouri Boot Heel is covered with these features called sand boils, which are formed when very energetic earthquake waves pass through saturated sand on floodplain deposits. And this produces basically quicksand conditions. And so there were lots of reports of houses sinking into the floodplain. Several towns were destroyed by this sort of quicksand.
Was this before, during, or after the earthquake?
This happens during the earthquake. It's a process called liquefaction, spelled U-E, not U-I. And it basically just removes the supporting capacity of alluvial materials like sand. And anything sitting on the sand when this happens basically sinks. And there can also be sand volcanoes and things like this. All sorts of strange things were reported during these events. There were a series of five fairly large earthquakes, although two of them probably are considered aftershocks of the first one. They occurred on the same day as
now,
the first one.
Now, that zone, the New Madrid seismic zone, is known for five, as you mentioned, of the largest North American earthquakes in recorded history, although a good deal of them happened before Richter scales were invented. What do we know about that area now, Charles Spence?
Well, the U.S. Geological Survey considers it probably the area of the country that poses the highest potential risk in the event of major earthquake.
Even more so than the faults out on the West Coast.
Well, one of the problems with assessing this is that none of these faults are exposed at the surface. And measurements of what kind of strain is building up or what kind of stress is building up and what kind of movement is actually occurring on these faults is all hidden. And it's really kind of indirect. In California, for example, geologists can measure the movement along the San Andreas Fault directly. The fault's exposed at the surface and they can put markers on either side of it and just measure how much distance changes between them. But in New Madrid, everything is buried under many thousands of feet of sand and mud of the Mississippi and Ohio River deposits.
So is there a way to go down? And do we know how many faults there are in the seismic zone?
Probably,
do we estimate?
Probably not. The one of the ways that they identify the faults is based on epicenters
of the earthquakes.
Of earthquakes, or focuses of the earthquakes, actually. The difference is the epicenters, the point on the ground surface directly above where the fault actually moved. And where the fault actually moved is called the focus. And so if they plot these out where the earthquakes are occurring, you can pick up a pattern because every time a little earthquake happens and they can figure out where the movement was, they can plot it on a map or a three-dimensional plot now, and it plots out in pretty much straight line. There seems to be three major faults in the region, two of which run more or less southwest to northeast, and they are transected by a southeast to northwest fault that sort of cuts through them.
So a crisscrossing,
yeah,
so to speak.
Exactly. And this would be consistent with a rift zone. We see the very same kind of pattern at places like the Mid-Atlantic Ridge where the crustal plates are being dislocated, and there are some offsetting faults there as well.
Where is this Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and is there any continental topographical connection to New Madrid?
Well, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge is a mountain range that runs down the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, which is why it's called the Mid-Atlantic
Ridge. That makes sense.
Yeah. Sometimes science makes sense. It is a place where new seafloor is being formed as magma comes up and fills in cracks in the Earth's crust. The Earth's crust, or lithosphere, we'll just call it the crust for argument's sake, is being pushed away on either side of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. Our part of North America is attached to the western half of the Atlantic Ocean seafloor as part of what's called the North American Plate. And we're pretty much in the middle of the North American Plate. The western boundary is the San Andreas Fault, and it runs to the northwest off the coast of Oregon and Washington, where there are volcanoes and earthquakes. That's the western boundary of the North American Plate. The plate's moving more or less to the northwest a few centimeters a year. Because it's bumping up against the Pacific Plate on the West Coast, stresses can build up in the crust. And so the traditional view of why earthquakes occur at New Madrid is simply related to the fact that there's a weakness in the crust there. There's a bunch of big faults there. And as these stresses build up, occasionally movement has occurred. And that's pretty much what I think the current seismic risk assessment is based on, is that kind of a process.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. Our guest is geologist Charles Spencer, also the author of Roadside Geology of Missouri. We're discussing the New Madrid Fault in the Missouri Boot Heel. 200 years ago today, the region's most devastating earthquake happened. And today, several states are commemorating that day with what's called the Great Central U.S. Shakeout Day. Kansas City, what are your opinions on earthquakes? Are you interested in earthquake preparedness? You have questions about soil, tectonic plates, shifts, all those geological goodies. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We've got Brian from KCK on the line. Brian, welcome to Central Standard.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I love the topic, and I'm so excited to read your book, The Roadside Geology of Missouri.
Well, thank you.
I happen to be a whitewater rafting guide out in New Mexico, and one of the unexpected gifts was my newfound love for geology. And I'll cut to the chase. Elephant in the room, in my room anyways. What would you say about fracking in the area? And also, how about the nuclear power plants in the region? And were they designed for such an earthquake? And no.
We're losing you a little bit, Brian, but he wanted to talk about a geological process known as fracking.
Fracking is basically a process used in oil and gas exploration where fluids are pumped into an oil or gas-bearing formation, and the idea is they're pumped in under pressure, and that forces the existing fractures in the formation to get bigger, and that allows the oil and gas to get out. Fracking fluids are usually then deposited or disposed of in a disposal well that is drilled into a different formation, either above or below the oil and gas bearing formation. And it's been related to earthquakes most recently in Ohio. There's been some concern in places like Pennsylvania that these fracking fluids might not necessarily be causing earthquakes, but pollution of aquifers.
Now, Brian brings up an interesting point. He talked about nuclear power plants and their role in environmental disasters and whether or not they would be able to withstand earthquakes, and the oil drilling question as well. Are these man-made industrial endeavors affecting the Earth's crust at all?
In a very limited way. There have been in the past proposals that, for example, we might be able to control the San Andreas Fault by either pumping fluids down in it, or somebody even proposed setting off a nuclear bomb.
Wow.
Yeah, well.
That sounds very smart.
Let's
set off a nuclear bomb on
Earth. Not one of our brighter bulbs in geology there, but the problem is to do that intentionally, you'd just be asking for trouble because you can't control what happens. Earthquakes have been caused by pumping fluids into the subsurface. There's a famous case in Denver where...
What about by extraction?
It can happen. Yes, it can happen the same way. If you're pumping from an aquifer and you're drawing
an underwater
source of groundwater, and you pump the water out, it lowers the water pressure in the aquifer, and that can cause a settlement of rocks and soil above it. And there are a lot of places in the country that have had surface subsidence related to that kind of thing.
We have Mike in South KC. Welcome to Central Standard, Mike.
Thank you. My question is, it relates to the, when the, I've always heard these war stories, but when they had this 7 magnitude earthquake, what time of the year was it? And what I'm getting to is the story I always heard was it reversed the course of the Mississippi for a time period. My question is, what do you know about that? And my question about the time of the year would be probably related to the volume of water that might be in the river. Of course, back in those days, those rivers were, they say, an inch deep and mile wide. So with that, I'll hang up and listen for your question. I'm answered. Thank you.
There were lots of stories that came out of the events. It started on December 16th. There were three large earthquakes that day. There was another large earthquake on January 23rd. And then on February 7th, the last major earthquake, which arguably was the largest, occurred. And it was that one that caused disruption of the Mississippi River floodplain. The previous faults had apparently moved more or less sideways. The fault that was involved with the last earthquake, the movement, a large part of it, appears to have been vertical, and rocks slid up, and it produced a feature, a topographic feature that's still today there, called the Tiptonville Horst. A horst, ending in a T, is a geologic term for any block of the Earth's crust that gets pushed up. It was that blocked the flow of the Mississippi for a short time, probably no more than a day or so. So in effect, the flow probably did go backwards a little bit. It probably also impounded a fairly large lake, but the river reestablished a course through this uplifted area of sand and mud. There were some waterfalls reported. The original town of New Madrid actually sank and was inundated by the Mississippi. The Mississippi actually changed its course a little bit.
And swallowed up the original town.
Swallowed up the original town. So if you go to New Madrid today, you can stand on the observation deck on the levee and look out to the general area where the original town was.
We're on with geologist Charles Spencer. We're commemorating the 200th anniversary, the bicentennial of the New Madrid earthquake, one of the largest earthquakes, the largest earthquake in this region in history. Stuart from Shawnee wants to know, can you explain Richter scale, what it measures and how it measures, essentially, the shaking?
That is a great question, and I just talked about it in class last night. The Richter scale was invented by two geophysicists at Caltech, Charles Richter and Benno Gutenberg.
The Gutenberg scale didn't kind
The Gutenberg
of,
scale didn't stick.
Didn't kind of wake out, didn't stick.
No, although he actually is given credit among geophysicists as being the more famous of the two. They developed this scale as a way to quantify earthquakes that were occurring in California, fairly moderate intensity earthquakes. And it actually is based on ground vibration recorded on a seismogram. And it was, he established the zero of his Richter scale as the earthquake that produced 1 micron of displacement of the needle on his seismogram. And it was a particular seismograph instrument that he was using. So it was never really intended to apply to all earthquakes everywhere. And they
only the faults,
only the ones
that were applicable in California.
In California, and fairly moderate events. So, but it did sort of get out the magnitude. It's called magnitude, and it's based on ground vibration. And each number of the Richter scale represents a tenfold increase in the displacement of the earth of the needle on the seismogram, or the physical amount of vibration. You can think of it that way.
So if you're between 7 and 10, it's pretty heavy duty.
The difference between 7 and 10 would be 3 orders of magnitude, or 1,000 times more vibration. And they quickly realized that it didn't really work real well for very large earthquakes. And it's also possible to have a negative Richter magnitude, because he arbitrarily set the zero on his scale at a certain displacement.
So even the Richter scale isn't an exact science.
It isn't. They use a different version of it now called moment magnitude, which is the same kinds of numbers, but it's based on a more scientific assessment of the amount of movement on the fault, the size of the fault, the distance on the fault over which movement occurred, things like that. It's a much more, I like to say, science-y calculation.
Science-y.
But they still report it as a magnitude, and it more or less lines up with Richter magnitude till you get it to very big earthquakes.
Gail in Basor, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, good morning, and I'm sure every person who's moved to Kansas and Missouri from California is probably trying to get through. And I just told the lady that I moved here 7 years ago, and I spent 25 years in California and had my own personal experiences with earthquakes. But I, the first thing I asked for when I got my home insurance was earthquake coverage here. And I have it, and I've always had it here. It's $30 a year and worth every penny just to have the peace of mind. So I don't imagine that there are too many people here, but it's something that becomes very indelibly imprinted on your brain when you live in California for any length of time and you've felt major earthquakes. I actually was a mile from the epicenter during the Northridge earthquake, and I had taken a course in California geography that described in detail everything that happens during an earthquake. But until you actually live through one, the one that I lived through in Northridge was so intense that the G-forces, you read about it until you actually feel it. I couldn't get out of bed. The G-forces were so strong, I could not sit up. And things were not rolling off the furniture. They were shooting across the room. So that's my experience, and I find it fascinating that the fellow with the rafting experience, once you get into geology, it is very fascinating. And anyway, that's my experience, and I recommend anybody just call their agent up and talk about adding earthquake insurance, although it may get more expensive as time goes by and people realize that this is an area that, you know, is susceptible, definitely. And why wouldn't you want to have it for that price? So anyway, a fascinating show, and you want to be away from earthquakes when they happen.
Thank you, Gail, for your input. You definitely want to be away from earthquakes when they happen. Charles Spencer, as recently as 2008, FEMA said that a serious earthquake in the New Madrid seismic zone could result in the highest economic losses due to a natural disaster in the United States. They further predicted widespread and catastrophic damage. Today, what are geologists saying about whether or not the New Madrid, earthquake could happen in modern times? They sort of went backward and revised the Richter scale. The faults are hard to get to and measure because of the sediment topography there in that New Madrid region. So what's the deal down there?
Well, assessing risk from natural disasters is very much a case of hope for the best and expect the worst. And so disaster planning at the federal level usually presupposes the worst-case scenario. If the same events occurred now, St. Louis, Memphis, up the Ohio River Valley, there would be considerable damage. How much it would cause damage in Kansas City, it would be much less simply because of the geology.
But that quake was felt as far away as Boston.
I always keep in mind the fact that in 1811 and 1812, there was not instantaneous communication between New Madrid and Boston, and it probably took weeks for the word to get out that something had happened. And so then you're based on, you know, you're looking at people's memories of, oh, yeah, I seem to remember that the bells rang 3 weeks ago. The USGS considers it a high-risk area, and that's probably the safest thing to consider. There's some recent research that has suggested that the buildup of stress in that region may be declining over time, and that the likelihood of those types of events may be lower than we might anticipate from the historical record. Not most geophysicists buy that at this point.
The Missouri Department of Natural Resources, the State Emergency Management Agency, and the Missouri Seismic Safety Commission and others are conducting hazard mapping projects. As we speak, what are hazard mapping projects?
Well, hazard mapping is the process where you basically identify geologic hazards of one kind or another. It could be used for any other hazard. So they'll map landslide prone areas, or areas prone to earthquake, or areas prone to flooding, any geologic type disaster that might befall So it's just a mapping exercise to find areas that are most at risk.
Let's talk now about the global picture as we look at tsunamis and earthquakes. We saw a lot last year in various parts of the world, Indonesia. While the continents are no longer connected physically, what's the significance of this uptick in global seismic activity?
Well, actually, there probably hasn't been an uptick.
There hasn't been.
Historically speaking.
It just looks like it because they're so close together.
Exactly. And we're more aware of what goes on in other places in the world today than we were 100 years ago. And so the frequency of major geologic events probably really hasn't increased. It's just that we're more sensitive to it and the news gets out immediately and we have pictures.
North America is slowly shifting to the northwest, and we're shifting further away from Africa continentally.
Yes, very slowly.
Why is that happening, and what would be the result of that?
Well, the North American plate is being pushed to the northwest by a process called seafloor spreading, which is the process by which new ocean seafloor is produced at the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. And we're being pushed to the northwest, but along the east coast of Asia, the Pacific seafloor is being pushed back down into the Earth's mantle and melting again at places called subduction zones. And this is where deep ocean trenches are found. And so the seafloor is basically being recycled. Sooner or later, North America and Asia will collide. I don't think we should worry about it because it will probably take another 50 million years. So I don't think any of us are going to be around to worry.
Since it's 2012, I have to ask, what do the Mayans have to say about earthquakes in geology?
Well, this is a whole show.
It is.
But my view of the Mayan so-called prediction is that if the Mayans had been able to actually predict the demise of civilizations, one would have thought they might have predicted the end of their own first.
That's a common running joke.
Yes, it is. And it's because it has nothing to do with anything. It's a confabulation of a lot of these apocalypse myths.
There's confabulation. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. It's a big word. The Mayan calendar thing is most archaeologists can't even agree on when the Mayan calendar was supposed to so-called end. The long cycle ended anyway because it's hard to correlate it with our calendar, which was invented in Europe. So this event could have happened years ago or it could happen years from now. The point is when it happens, it's not going to cause any major disasters. I'll come back on December 22nd, and if I'm wrong, you can tell me I told you so.
If you're wrong, I think we'll all know.
I'll bring donuts.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Our guest, geologist Charles Spencer, has been confabulating with us about the New Madrid Fault in the Missouri Boot Hill 200 years ago, the region's most devastating earthquake to date. It happened 200 years ago today. And today, several states are commemorating that day with what's called Great Central U.S. Shakeout Day. Thank you for coming, Charles Spencer. And when we return from a brief intermission, because I won't say break because we just got finished talking about earthquakes, we go from shake and quake to shake and bake as recipe maven Beth Bader joins us to tell us about a healthy Valentine's Day and healthy Valentine's Day treats for your loved ones. We'll be right back.